All right, I think that we'll get started. This is Jessica Halperin. I am the Reproductive Justice Advocate here at the Unitarian Universalist Association.
Hi, this is Ann Hansen.
Hi, Ann. And it's my pleasure and honor to welcome you to the first webinar that we're doing this year. It's an introductory webinar on reproductive justice, and I'm very happy to be co-hosting with Reverend Rob Keithen, who is the Director of Public Policy at the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. And we're also thrilled to have Lynn Roberts on the line. She is a board member at Sister Song, which is a Women of Color Reproductive Justice Collective. So they're an important partner of ours in this effort, and we're very glad to have her on the line also. So as a reminder, if folks could press star 6 to mute themselves, we are going to be using the chat function online to ask and answer some questions as the webinar goes forward. So there are several at the top of the screen at Join Me. There are 5 green buttons, and there's one that looks like a little speech bubble. So click that and open up the chat function, and you guys can converse. The way that this is going to work is that right now everybody who is looking at the webinar is looking actually at my screen. So I am not going to open up the chat function like that. Otherwise, you can't see the presentation. With that, let's get started. Rob is going to take us through some of the UU history in working on reproductive rights.
All right. So I am the Reverend Rob Keithen. I worked for the UUA Washington office for many years and am now the Director of Public Policy at the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. And I want to start by just saying a little about our history on the issue. Contrary to popular belief, as far as I can tell, Margaret Sanger was not a Unitarian Universalist. However, there were many Unitarians, and to a lesser extent, Universalists, who were very much involved in the early founding of essentially the birth control movement and Planned Parenthood in this country. Our own history I'm going to pick up with in the 60s, and the Unitarian Universalist Association's very first General Assembly after the two denominations combined was 1961. And so 1963 is only 2 years later where we adopted, as you can see on your screen, a resolution called Reform of Abortion Statutes, which called for enactment of a uniform law making abortion legal in essentially any compelling circumstance. It went through a few different possibilities for where abortion should be legal and then said, and for any other compelling moral, spiritual, or economic reason. We have a pretty long track record here of pretty strong support. And as you can see, we passed other statements in 73, 75, 77, 78, 80, and 85. During that time in the early 60s, there was also a lot of Unitarian Universalists involved with the Clergy Consultation Service on abortion, which was an informal network that helped women get counseling on all different options related to abortion. And UUs have been involved in some of the most important cases decided on reproductive justice-related issues in the 60s and 70s. When the birth control clinic in New Haven, Connecticut was closed in the case that eventually became Griswold v. Connecticut that legalized abortion or legalized birth control for married couples, the Unitarian Society of New Haven operated that clinic underground after it was officially closed. So that's a pretty cool service that a bunch of women in the New Haven Church did. Also, the 1972 Supreme Court case of Eisenstadt versus Baird is the case that legalized contraception for individuals, and that case was brought by a Unitarian Universalist doctor, that being Baird. And then the Roe decision itself really has a lot of grounding from the First Unitarian Church of Dallas and women involved there with abortion rights work. And so out of that, the UUA helped to form the Religious Coalition then for abortion rights in 1973. And as I'm told, I just started here in February, I'm told by our director of interfaith outreach that Unitarian Universalists are still very much the leaders in the reproductive or the religious coalition community, that we're the most supportive folks, which is not a surprise. Recently, however, our support, at least at the associating level, has kind of dwindled, is maybe the wrong word, but it hasn't been as strong. Our last major statement from the General Assembly was in 1993 on federal legislation for choice, which reaffirmed a lot of our positions, including the very strong position of making federal funding available for women to have abortions, and also for women in the armed services, both of which are significant issues now. And then in 2003, the GA passed an action of immediate witness calling for participation in the March for Women's Lives. You know, significant, but essentially it's been nearly 20 years since the UUA adopted anything in the reproductive justice arena. So we think it's time to get reproductive justice back, issues back in front of the UUA, and Jessica is going to say a little bit more about what exactly reproductive justice is.
Sure. Well, reproductive justice as a framework emphasizes that it understands a level of social inequality that exists that hasn't really been represented by the framework of reproductive rights or reproductive health. The people who have put forth this concept of reproductive justice have largely been women of color, and they understand that each person's ability to live out their rights and access to the necessary reproductive health services is shaped by social injustices like lack of poverty, education, or lack of education or poverty, racism, sexism, and the rest. So reproductive justice tries to kind of remove these issue silos to look at the totality of people's lives. It's not only focusing on legal barriers or healthcare barriers. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Not too well, though.
Okay. But it tries to remove reproductive health or rights out of the issue silos and really kind of look at the totality of people's lives. It's not just about barriers to health care or abortion. So that's kind of what we mean by reproductive justice. And so it has three or four components, depending on who you talk to. And Lynn Roberts, our partner with Sister Song, is going to talk more about these. But just briefly, the right of people to have the children that they want to have, to raise the children that they have in healthy and safe environments, and also to not have the children that they don't want to have. And then also some folks have added the right to express their sexuality without oppression. So this is kind of what we mean by reproductive justice, but we're going to here's a great definition that the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice has come up with. Rob, do you want to talk to that?
Yeah, so the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice just adopted a new strategic plan which committed us to becoming a reproductive justice organization. And we wanted to come up with a definition for us that was true to the definitions used by Sister Song and a group called Asian Communities for Reproductive Justice that recently changed their name to Forward Together. Since, you know, those traditions and those definitions are very important, and we wanted something that reflected the nature of RCRC as a religious organization. And so this is what we come up with, and it is simply our staff's latest working definition. It's a work in progress, but I just want to read it to you. For RCRC, reproductive justice means that all people and communities should have the social, spiritual, economic, and political means to experience the sacred gift of sexuality with health and wholeness. And you'll notice that there's just several places in there with spiritual and sacred and wholeness that we try and capture a sort of a larger religious context, while also being very true to the original definitions that look at social, economic, and political resources necessary and bring in the, sort of those multiple levels of identity to combat religious oppression. The other thing I would point out is that we specifically reference all people and communities because reproductive justice is intentionally a community-focused approach rather than an individual-focused approach. And with that, I'm so glad that Lynn Roberts from Sister Song is able to join us on the call. Sister Song is probably more than any other organization responsible for defining reproductive justice and spreading it, and really does amazing work. And I'm so grateful that Lynn is able to be with us and to take us through Reproductive Justice 101 from her and their perspective. So thank you, Lynn, and take it away.
Oh, thank you so much, Rob and Jessica, for the overview and such a generous introduction. Okay, so next slide, please. I just wanted to begin by going over what reproductive oppression is. And although I think Rob and Jessica already brought out what reproductive justice is, a starting point perhaps is to just elaborate on reproductive oppression as the control and exploitation of women, girls, and individuals through our bodies, our sexuality, our labor, and our reproduction. And to bear witness to the historical and current regulation of women and individuals and how that, as Rob just pointed out, often becomes a way to control entire communities. So when you control the production of women and also their sexuality and labor and also girls and other individuals, it's that aspect of it, that it's not just individuals who are affected, that makes it really significant to make sure that our understanding of it and our advocacy to address it operates on the community level. And these systems of oppression, of course, as has been mentioned, are based on a variety of social forces, such as racism and discrimination based on ability, class, gender, sexuality, age, and immigration status, to name. That's not an exhaustive list, but those are some of the most significant ones. Next, thank you. So some of the historical examples of reproductive oppression have included, what was the forced breeding of African descendant women during the transatlantic slave trade. And that oftentimes when we talk about, choice, what's often not described is that many women, and particularly women of color, have been prevented from having children through sterilization abuse. Another aspect has been that sometimes in terms of raising, children, having families of choice, has been that children have often been separated from their parents, their families, their communities, such as indigenous peoples, through the boarding school that were set up. If people aren't familiar, where indigenous children, Native American children here in the U.S. were sent to boarding schools and placed in white families to basically rid them of their culture. And if you look at foster care today, many of the children placed in foster care are children of color, and it's disproportionate to their rates of child abuse and neglect or factors that might contribute to child abuse and neglect in other families. So those are just some of the examples. More recently, we've had welfare reform laws limiting the number of children that women can have. Next slide, please. So I also wanted to point out, and Jessica highlighted this as well, that the reproductive justice framework is not, separate and apart from reproductive rights or reproductive health. We see these as a three-pronged approach to responding to reproductive oppression. So I'm going to discuss each one of them briefly and touch on their highlights and also some of the challenges, but stress that all three are important and that they aren't mutually exclusive. Next slide, please. So I'll begin with reproductive health, which basically is that we have to provide a set of reproductive health services not only to women but also to men and those who don't who don't conform to a gender status. That these services, though, are very critical to ensuring that women and their families and others are safe and healthy. And so this emphasis is to make sure that those services are available, that they're accessible, affordable, that the providers of those services are well-trained, and that they aren't threatened in receiving those services by violence. And then with this model, it's not adequate in and of itself to address reproductive oppression because the emphasis is still largely on the individual level and having access to those services. The disparities that might contribute to these services not being adequately accessible would not be addressed just by the provision of those services. And that, you know, we basically need to work on also a wide range of approaches related to the education of communities around the importance of these services, as well as the service providers, and making sure that how they provide those services address the actual needs of the communities that are less or underserved. Next slide, please. And the reproductive rights framework, which I know that the Unitarians have been very involved in and successful in many ways in utilizing this framework, recognizes that we have to have legal protections and also the monitoring and enforcement of various laws that protect individual women's legal right to reproductive health care services. And there's been a primary emphasis on abortion. The strategies involved, advocacy at the state and federal levels, and also mobilizing on the ground to ensure that various constituencies participate actively in the political process. And these key advocates have largely come from, in addition to, grassroots efforts and faith-based efforts, such as yours, or uniquely as yours, from legal professionals. And some of the challenges and limitations of this approach or this part of the framework has been that, again, this focus on individual choice might not look at the larger social context, which restricts that choice for particular groups of people and communities. Next slide, please. I will cite the definition that Rob mentioned earlier, put forth by Asian Communities for Reproductive Justice, or ACRJ.
I'm doing this thing now. Wait, you need something back?
Which is now called Forward Together. Their
Mom and I going out to dinner.
If folks could mute themselves, that would be great.
Yes. Reproductive justice is the complete physical, mental, spiritual, political, social, and economic well-being of women and girls based on the full achievement and protection of women's human rights. I will just point out, because I'm going to share another definition in a minute by Sister Song, that the emphasis in highlighting women and girls, and let me just point out that ACRJ has been a member organization of Sister Song and was one of the founding members of the Sister Song Collective, that our emphasis on women and girls has largely been because of the need to recognize have been largely disenfranchised by the reproductive oppression that I've described previously. But I salute the broader, more inclusive definition that the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice has put forward. And at a later time, we'd love to discuss further how Sister Song has been, you know, strategically engaged in a more inclusive, not so much only the definition, but just a broader participation within our movement, although allies have always been a part, but even the question of women and trans members to be more actively visible within our aspect of movement building. Next slide, please. So just by way of history, the framework originated at a gathering of African-American women in Chicago in 1994, and they recognized that we needed to articulate the needs of communities of color and the specific ways in which reproductive and sexual oppression impact them. And we wanted to adopt an intersectional analysis that was informed by the human rights framework, and we also incorporated an element of self-help from what we had learned from prior attempts for women of color to mobilize and needing to recognize that doing anti-oppression work often is painful. And so we have built in self-help ways to support each other as we do the work. And we wanted the framework to be inclusive and as applicable to everyone as possible, as I just mentioned, which means that's continually needing to be examined and assured. Next slide, please. So the key principles of reproductive justice are that we believe that every woman has the right to decide if and when she will have a baby and the conditions under which she will give birth, to decide if she will not have a baby and her options for preventing or ending a pregnancy, and to parent the children she has with the necessary social supports in safe environments and healthy communities and without fear of violence from individuals or the government. And this was what was an initial definition put forward by Sister Song. And as it has been adopted and also revised by others, I just wanted to call people's attention to how we originally conceived this within Sister Song. And we actually do consider ourselves the originator of the term reproductive justice, although the framework itself has had many applications. So our key strategies for reproductive justice include supporting the leadership and power of those most excluded groups of women and girls within a culturally relevant context that recognizes and addresses the multi-layered impact of oppression on their lives. We develop that leadership and we build the social, political, and economic power of low-income women of color and their communities so they can survive and thrive. We seek to advance a concrete agenda that wins real individual, community, institutional, and societal changes for poor women and girls of color. And I would add indigenous. And we integrate grassroots issues and constituencies that are multiracial, multigenerational, and multi-class into the national policy arena. And finally, we build a network of allied social justice organizations who integrate a reproductive justice analysis and agenda into their work, which is very much what this, the purpose of this call and the mission of the United Universal Congregations are a fine example of. Next slide, please. And I don't know how we're doing for time, Jessica. Are we still good?
We can. We'll keep moving forward.
Okay.
Got a lot to cover, though.
All right. The only challenge, some of the challenges and limitations of the reproductive justice framework, and there's not a lot of time to go into this, is that it can be challenging to people personally and also politically, because we're asking folks to perhaps adopt a worldview that is diametrically opposed to the status quo. And with that, it might involve taking personal risks, including taking direct action against those who abuse power. It can often be fraught with frustration because long-term change requires more resources and staying power, and that the potential for radical transformation might alarm people and invite backlash. So those are pretty hefty challenges, but still thought they'd be important to mention, even though, you know, to go into each one of these points, you know, would be lengthier than the time we have. So some of those threats to reproductive justice of late, and I can't cover all of these. I know many, if not all of you on this call, are well aware of several of them. But the repeated attempts to further restrict abortion access, or the fact that we haven't had full access even in the early years since Roe v. Wade, and that's happened through personhood bills and elimination or attempts to eliminate and restrict funding across the board for primary reproductive health care, anti-immigrant, anti-union policies, the specific billboard campaigns that target African American and other communities of color to suggest that the most dangerous place for an African American child is in the womb, as an example. And again, various legislative and anticipated and real decisions to be made by current and future Supreme Courts. So all that said, I don't think I've told those who aren't already aware what Sister Song is. It is a national network of more than 80, I don't even know the number, but 88 sounds about right at the time, women of color-led organizations, as well as allied organizations, and at recent count, 400 or more individuals who support our goal of improving the lives of indigenous women and women of color in the United States through reproductive justice. The collective was formed based on the five ethnic populations and indigenous nations in the United States in those categories. I won't name them. And we, you know, do the work that was described earlier to bring women together, bring organizations rather together, women of color organizations. And I just want to point out, you know, allied organizations include those that support the framework but might not be women of color led. There are also women of color who work for organizations that are not women of color led. I'm one example of that. I am employed by Hunter College of the City University of New York. So I am a woman of color, but I am not affiliated with a women of color led organization. But also allied organizations such as the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood, New Jersey, has been a long-term allied member of Sister Song. And men are considered allies. Next slide, please. We offer training to constituents and staff of organizations. We have Reproductive Justice 101, 102, and beyond, depending on how many times people invite us back. We do human rights education in general, and we offer self-help training as well. You can visit our website to learn more about us and to follow our work. And I just wanted to wrap up my segment here by stressing how important it is to build coalition around reproductive justice and to also adopt what I think is an approach that is not based on helping so much as it is joining with people in solidarity to ensure that we end reproductive justice because it will be to the benefit of all. And this is a quote I like to use to raise that up. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Lynn. This is Rob Keithan from the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice again speaking. you've just done such a beautiful job of introducing us to reproductive justice, and you know, we're new to it at RCRC. I think it's definitely kind of a new approach for the UUA, and I think I can safely speak for both Jessica and I always say we look forward to learning a lot more from you and working hopefully very closely with Sister Song as we really deepen our analysis and understanding and you know, follow the leadership that you and other women of color have been giving to us for so many years. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
And now we have some time for questions. Again, we're going to do questions via the chat feature on the website. The second little green button from the left, if you mouse over, it'll say chat. And you can feel free to click that and then type a question into the chat box, and I will read it for everyone's benefit, and we'll take a few questions for Lynn or for Jessica or I, although I think we only have Lynn for a limited time, so I would privilege questions that come to Lynn. And then we will say a little bit more about UU organizing and wrap up at the end. But if you have questions, go ahead and type them on in there.
While the questions are coming in, I just wanted to highlight one point that Rod had mentioned, the Unitarians' involvement in the March for Women's Lives and their participation in 2004. And what folks might not be aware of is that our national coordinator of Sister Song, Loretta Ross, was a co-leader of the march. It wasn't lifted up as much in the media. And we also were responsible for changing the name of that march to the March for Women's Lives, because it was originally going to be the, you know, a march for choice. And that was when we were able to really highlight that women's lives were broader than just the aspect of choice.
That's fantastic. I had known that had happened.
Aware of that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was from y'all. That was fantastic. We were very excited about that change. So I'm going to pick some of the questions I think might be most relevant to the whole audience. Question is, how do you suggest that you know, based on what Sister Song is doing, that we respond to the rhetoric of the religious right, you know, and there's been so much in the culture and policy recently. You know, what have you folks been saying about, you know, the access to birth control and things like that? Is that a fair question?
It is a fair question. I think it is one, you know, where this is where we have that dialogue. I think many times those of us who are involved in social justice work in general and reproductive justice work in particular are challenged to utilize, I think, the framing of the issues and the, you know, the anti-choice rhetoric by reclaiming, you know, messages, you know, such as, you know, what does it mean to be pro-life, you know, which suggests that what we do is not pro-life. So I feel like we often have to, in a faith-based environment, really have the dialogues that it's not left to those who are anti-choice or anti-reproductive justice to prevent us from claiming, you know, the messaging and language and reaching it within a context that we know is spiritual and life promoting and you know, significant for, you know, those who have been the most marginalized. And I think we have, unfortunately, sometimes not the resources to the mainstream media that they have, or certainly not some of the political access either. But I do think that you know, the work that we still would like to see happen that hasn't happened in many of the faith communities traditionally associated with you know, women of color and their families and communities have to have a way to, you know, bring it within the context of our faith. And I think those opportunities are still pretty nascent and that we're creating them as we speak. And so there have to be ways to frame and challenge leadership, faith leadership, in ways that hasn't happened. And that's where the work has to go there. I think a lot of the work has been with those building the capacity of the organizations who already would readily accept the framework, and we haven't had those cross dialogues fully or at all. And I say, that's like the next phase of where Sister Song is going. We've been building our capacity for the past 10 or more years. Now we have to take it to others who, for whom this is all new stuff.
Yeah, thanks. And it's an exciting time because there's so much.
And there's so much work to do. I mean, that's a challenge.
Yeah.
We're doing it at a time when things are so urgent.
Yeah.
They couldn't be more urgent than they are right now. The backlash is fierce. And some of that's because of our success, too. I think some of the backlash is intense because we have been pushing it forward. I do believe that's true.
Yeah, if we're not making any people mad,
that's a good sign, yeah.
Well, yeah, we're not doing our work. So one is kind of a more specific question about welfare reform. I think, can you elaborate on how welfare reform limits the number of children a woman can have, so sort of unpacking that a little bit?
Well, this is, a time when welfare reform was touted as being so, so much of a deficit reduction, and also that people somehow were utilizing welfare, excessively. In raw numbers, we know that the majority of, people who actually were receiving welfare benefits were not families of color, but that's what the mainstream media and those opponents to full enfranchisement would have you believe that these were largely women of color and families of color. The punitive aspect of it would be that people's benefits again would specifically be reduced based on the number of children they have, and that that was the idea that they as a disincentive to them having children. At the same time, access to comprehensive sexuality education and contraception not being widely or equally accessible to families kind of contradicted that aim. But broader than just that policy alone, there were, there was encouragement of adoption policy. So a whole range of kind of family-directed initiatives that were seen as ways to somehow emphasize women's reproduction, at the same time not putting in place the having policies that would support families' optimum and, women of color and poor women's optimum choices in making those decisions themselves.
Right. Thanks. And one last question is we are two religious organizations, and someone asked if you would be willing to speak a little bit more about the how we express the spiritual component of reproductive justice.
Well, I think recognizing that women are, just as valued as children, and that we have an obligation to the the full body self-determination of a human being to practice and have their beliefs, whatever those are, and however they practice their spirituality recognized and honored. And I also think that because we represent such a wide range of beliefs as communities, indigenous communities, communities of color, and poor communities, that we have to recognize the diversity of beliefs within that. And it's about honoring that there is a, that one's faith is between that individual and you know, it's that should be the a fundamental right of all to be recognized.
Yeah.
I think it's up to faith communities within their faith to bring in their their liturgy, if you will, or what, you know, their sacred texts, their practices, and find meaning that supports that.
Yeah, thanks. And that is a great segue. And I think everyone can count on future webinars and other educational opportunities coming from both the UUA and RCRC on the theology of reproductive justice and some of the spiritual elements specifically. But we also have an incredible opportunity right now in that the General Assembly in Phoenix, Arizona, coming up this June, will select one issue that will be the UUA's Congregational Study Action issue from 2012 to 2016. And one of those five possibilities is reproductive justice. And so I am working with very closely with the sponsors of that from the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood, New Jersey, to see if we can't get this issue put before the UUA for 4 years. And I'll say, Lynn, thank you again for being with us, and you are certainly welcome to stay on the call. But otherwise, we will also understand if you want to get back to your duties at Hunter.
Yeah, thank
and
you
we will
so much.
Follow
yes,
up
I have
with you later.
Student hours in a little while. But thank you all, and I really applaud your efforts. I'm happy to be a continuing resource to you, and look forward to our continuing partnership.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And now I want to call on Carol Lascauzo from the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood, New Jersey, the sponsoring congregation of this proposal, just to say a few words about sort of where they are and how folks can get involved.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Hi. I want to thank Lynn, Rob, and Jessica for presenting this webinar. It really was incredibly informative and an incredibly wonderful first step in helping us all to understand reproductive justice. And my understanding is that this will be on the UUA website in a couple of days, or is that correct?
Yes, you can find the proposed CSAI on the UUA website right now.
Right, but will this webinar be on the...
Oh, yeah. Yes, it
Great.
Will be on hopefully tomorrow.
That's wonderful. Okay. So I just wanted to speak very briefly about the proposed CSAI, which was put forth by the Reproductive Justice Committee of the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood. And we have been... About 5 years, we changed our name from Choice to Justice under the tutelage of Lynn Roberts. she was very helpful in explaining to us what being a Reproductive Justice Committee meant and in helping us to look at the intersections, and it really has informed how we've done our work a lot. And so we really felt that we wanted to bring this before the UUA. So we've got the proposed CSAI, and we are one of five that will be voted upon at GA on that Friday. we've had, probably many of you have been involved in, had two calls around organizing, and we certainly plan, well, we plan to have more, and our next call will be May 11th at 3 o'clock. And the best way to keep up to date with all the information about our organizing is through our new Yahoo group. And we, many of you, there are about, I want to say 13 people, I believe, who joined that Yahoo group. However, we just changed the name of it today in order to broaden its goals and its mission. And so it's now called UUs for Reproductive Justice, UUs for RJ. So I believe one of these slides here is my email address. And if you would like to be invited to be on that Yahoo group, please contact me and I will send you an invitation. If you have trouble getting onto Yahoo group, some people I know are on many and some people are not on any, please just let me know once I've invited you if you cannot find a way to join easily, and I'll just call, you know, we'll talk on the phone. I'll talk you through it. And I know that Mandy Restivo, who is my co-chair, will also be willing to do that. We didn't want to confuse you, so we've put one number up and one name and one email address. But we really would love as many people as we can who are going to GA, and even those who aren't, to be involved in helping us, because it's very clear to us that while we knew this would be a project, I don't think Mandy or I had any clue as to the magnitude of the project. And we know we need all the help we can get, and we've been getting wonderful help. Rob, what am I leaving out?
I think that's probably about all we have time for. Where there's,
yeah.
For folks that are interested in joining us in supporting the CSAI, and I see viewer 48 is, join the Yahoo group, email Carol, and we will get you plugged in to that organizing, because there is a lot of it, and we would love you to help us out, whether you can attend GA or you can't. There's still lots of meaningful ways to contribute. So thank you so much, Carol, for joining in, and I will turn it back over to Jessica to talk about other things that the UA has to offer and some next steps for the rest of us.
Well, if you are interested in getting involved with reproductive justice with the UUA, there are lots of ways to do that. Getting involved with the proposed CSAI is one of them. You can also get involved with your congregation in lots of different ways. I will just kind of go over some of the things that some of the resources that are available on the UUA Reproductive Justice web pages. You can find this webinar after tomorrow. And there's also a lot of resources for congregational life and legislative advocacy on the web pages. And then there are also Women's Issues Action Alerts that come out every 2 weeks, providing news and analysis and opportunities for action and lots of other things that you can find out about. Mostly it's federal level or national level things, but often we'll have states issues on those action alerts too. So go ahead and sign up on the website if you're interested. The RCRC and Sister Song websites are both also tremendous resources. On RCRC's website you can find sermons and prayers and also issue-specific information on stuff like abortion and sex ed and all of the other component issues that are part of reproductive justice. They also have an action center there. And on the Sister Song website, they've got a great resource called Mapping Our Rights. And it's difficult to keep updated, as many of us know, that things are changing all the time on the state level. But that's a great resource on the Sister Song website. They also have national conferences and trainings and programs. So check that out. There is a UUs for Reproductive Justice Facebook page, which is a great resource for staying in contact with each other. And also, anybody going to General Assembly will be sure to hook up with each other there. And you can get more information from me through those Women's Issues Action Alerts and in other ways about networking at General Assembly. Also, here are some, we wanted to offer you some opportunities to get involved on the local level with your congregation. This Saturday is Unite Against the War on Women. So there are events all across the country. You should get involved in one of those. If you need more information, you can contact me. But we'd like you, if you are affiliated with a congregation, to work with your social justice committee to raise awareness about reproductive justice. You can have a guest speaker or share the plate. A lot of folks are doing that with Planned Parenthood these days, but there's a lot of ways to get involved on a very basic level to introduce the idea of reproductive justice to your congregation. If your congregation's already talking about reproductive justice or reproductive rights, get them to start talking about reproductive justice. Maybe you could change the name of the reproductive rights group. That's a really great way to have these conversations, which are important to be having, that reproductive justice is not just the same thing as reproductive rights. You could pass a congregational motion in support of reproductive justice, or you could organize an action or a meeting in the community. And then you can also obviously encourage your service leader to preach or to do other programming about reproductive justice. If you're not affiliated with a congregation, we've all got lots of ideas about how you can get involved, organizing locally or writing letters to your legislators, so you can... there's lots of ways to stay involved. The next webinar, so if you are involved at all with your congregation, the next webinar will be interesting to you. We are hearing about best practices for congregational and legislative advocacy. So we'll have representatives from the Ridgewood, New Jersey Church and also the UU Church of Arlington, Virginia, who have really great and active UUs for reproductive justice groups at their congregations. To tell us about what they have done and what they do, how it changes the life of their congregation. And then we'll also hear from Reverend Aaron Payson, who is on this call, who's the minister in Worcester, Mass., and also a board member of RCRC, who's going to talk about legislative advocacy and all sorts of talking points and what we have to say as progressive people of faith about reproductive justice. So that's going to be on Thursday, May 24th at 8 p.m. So I hope you'll join us. Oh, and also, if there is interest, we would definitely not mind having this webinar again. So if you know folks that couldn't be on the call or if you missed parts of it today that you'd like to catch up on, it'll be available on the website, both the audio and the visual, but we'll be interested in doing it again if there's a request for that. So I'll just... to wrap up, ask you to give us some feedback on SurveyMonkey about this webinar. Tell us how we did and what more information or what different information you could have used. And also just please keep in touch with us. I'm at the UUA and very interested in what's going on with your congregation. And Rob Keithan is an expert in this field. So keep in touch with both of us.
Yeah, and I was simply add my thanks and appreciation for all of you that were able to join. You know, this is the first of what I hope will be many, many such webinars and a great partnership between the UUA and RCRC and Sister Song as well. Again, please, we'd love you to do the survey and let us know what else will be helpful, and look forward to hearing from you in various methods from here on out as we hopefully all get on the same page and do some very effective and, I think, transformative work in the UU world and beyond on reproductive justice.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.